The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, June the 8th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And, Chet, we're going all over the place on tonight's show. We've got our special guest, Leslie Goodell, talking Kendall's Crusade and the Phillies and the legend of Muhammad Ali and also how Philly fans feel about former players returning to play against their favorite teams.
Yeah, you know it, Bill, another action-packed show, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, hey, we're excited to have Comcast Sportsnet Phillies reporter Leslie Goodell back with us tonight. And Leslie has taken the time, Chet, on a rare night off to be home with her family, so we're going to get her on quickly and cover all the Phil's bases and the Kendall Crusade bases. But before we get started, real quick, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question again tonight. We'll be giving away the signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles star linebacker Jordan Hicks to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question right about 7:21. So write this number down so you're ready. Our shopforkisses.org phone line is 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. With that business taken care of, let's welcome Leslie Goodell back to the Philly Press Box Radio. Welcome, Leslie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to have you, especially on a rare night off at home.
Yes, no, it's nice to be able to be home, watch my son pitch in his playoff game. It was all good.
Fantastic.
Hey, Leslie. This is Chet. Leslie, thanks again for
joining us.
We do appreciate it. Hey, how you doing?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Because the Phillies lost today, we're not going to talk about them right away. So instead, what we're going to do, we're going to talk about what we talked with you about last summer. That's Kendall's Crusade, the Facebook page and campaign that you set up to educate people about AVM. All of this, of course, after your daughter in the fall of 2014, when she was just 11 at the time, suffered a stroke and was diagnosed with AVM. Now, I always do check for updates on that Facebook page, but tell us again, Leslie, what AVM is and how Kendall is doing today.
Well, AVM stands for arteriovenous malformation, and a lot of local Philly sports fans may remember when Mike Patterson was out for a while because he had collapsed on the field and then had surgery. He had a seizure and then was able to remove his AVM, but it was because of an AVM that he had. And then after they removed it, he was able to go back and play. Well, my daughter, you know, is not quite as fortunate because hers is inoperable and it also happens to be quite large. And what an AVM is it's a cluster of unnecessary blood vessels. So the way the body works is, after the blood leaves the heart, it carries through the arteries up into the brain, and then it goes through a capillary system, which slows down the blood, releases the oxygen, and then it goes back through the veins back to the heart to get more oxygen. And an AVM is a vein between that artery and vein connection where the capillaries usually are. They're veins that just don't slow the blood flow down, and they don't ever release the oxygen. So what happens is the blood's flowing through there so quickly that it eventually will rupture through a vein, and that's where the stroke occurs. My daughter also happened to have 3 aneurysms, so we really didn't have the luxury of waiting and just seeing. Some people had recommended we went home and lived our life that there was a 4% chance of rupture each year. But the reality after I looked into it was that there was probably something closer to a 14% rate of rupture each year. So that compounds and adds up over the years. So it's not just 14% through her lifetime. It's annually. So we didn't see that we should wait on anything. And we had to look for a long time. There was no one in the city of Philadelphia that would treat a pediatric patient with inoperable AVM, at least none that we found. And to my knowledge, there are none. I know both CHOP and DuPont do not. And radiation on children is something that not a lot of people do, but we didn't see it as an option to do anything except take action. So we found a doctor at Stanford, Dr. Stephen Chang and his team. They're wonderful, and they said it's probably going to take 8 to 10 years for us to get rid of her AVM if we're able to. And she just had her first scan in many months since her – it was 15 months since her first treatment and 10 months since her second. So 15 months removed from her first treatment, and it's 80% gone. So wonderful news that we just received, and we're not at the end of the tunnel yet, but I see the light. So it makes us feel very optimistic about where we can get.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that news, and that was just great. Now, I guess the goal, of course, is to get it 100% gone. Have they given you the odds on that at this point now?
No, I mean, from everything that I read early on and looked at, based on just all of the case studies I had read, the chances were probably somewhere in like the 70 to 80% range. But they felt optimistic that we'd eventually get rid of it over time. And there's no reason to think we can't. It's now, as much as hers is gone, it's now closer to what someone else's normal size AVM would be. So until you get rid of it entirely, you're always a stroke risk.
Well, Leslie, looking at the post that you put on Kendall's Crusade, it looks like Kendall is a true warrior. Does she stay pretty upbeat as well as her picture seems she is?
Yeah, it's funny because, I try to be as real as possible, but I also try to protect her because I know she sees the post. And not protect her from things she wouldn't tell other people, but just to not bring her down. And she stays very positive. That's her slogan. And we even made T-shirts that don't bring down my positive, as she likes to drop on people. But she, we went today to the rehab doctor, and she'd like to not have her brace on her foot, but the reality is she still needs it. And they do something where they put Botox in your calf to release the muscle from being too tight. And so she had to get that again today, and she was very disappointed that not only did she have to get the shot, she still has to wear her brace. But she's making great strides, and she's playing softball. Her team's in the championship game on Saturday, and she just, we try to treat life as normal as possible around here and stay upbeat. And at the same time, she knows that she has an opportunity to show others that, they're not alone and they can help overcome this.
And now, Leslie, the big news is that you've got a big old fundraiser coming up next month with an immensely talented comedian coming home to headline the event, and that would be this guy.
One Craig night with me, you'll be sweating like Jessica Simpson taking the SATs. That's right, baby. I'm the love master.
Yeah, we're talking about Craig Shoemaker. So tell me about him and what you have planned.
Craig is the best. If you haven't seen Craig, he is well worth the – I've seen him several times, and he's also a very good friend. He's flying in from Los Angeles just to do this show and event, and he adores Kendall. She adores him. She won't be able to sit through a show. It's not exactly kid appropriate, but he's going to be putting the show on. It's July 16th at the Valley Forge Casino, and tickets are available online to anybody who'd like to come. We are about halfway through our ticket sale, so we're a little bit ahead of schedule. So we're selling at a nice clip, which is great. And we have a VIP reception that starts at 5:45, and then general admission starts at 6:45, and then the comedy show itself will start around 8:00. And I have several of my fellow broadcasters and some former athletes that are coming to the event to be there. So, several celebrity guests, and it should just be a really fun night of having a few adult beverages and watching some great comedy and just seeing how awesome these AVM survivors are.
Yeah, I saw him in the 90s. He was great. And that was about the only cut I could take from the Love Master segment that was, kid-friendly, what I'm talking about.
Yes.
All right, that's going to be great. That's going to be just awesome, Leslie.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you letting me talk about it, because the more awareness is part of what we want to do, is teach awareness to people who don't know what AVMs are. Because you look at people with an AVM on the outside, and I can't tell you the number of people that say to Kendall, what did you do to your ankle, or what's wrong with your wrist? And, you know, we some people may skirt the issue. We say, oh, it's from she had an issue in her brain, and they don't, you know, really know what to say, but it gives us a chance to explain that, you know, there's challenges that face people that come in many different forms. It's rare. They say less than 1% of people have them. You know, we all have them in utero, and some people are born with them, and we all have tails in utero, and some people are born with those, as our neurosurgeon has explained to us. So, you know, she doesn't. It helps, especially with these young kids, no matter what form of medical issue they're afflicted with, to know that they're not alone and not feel alone. And I think that that's really important. So awareness and raising money for other people who need assistance to have AVMs, as well as also just trying to fund some research. We feel indebted to Stanford.
Fantastic, Leslie. And as we said before, when we had you here the last time, from both Chet and I, our thoughts and prayers are with your family and with Kendall.
Thank you, Bill.
Looking for nothing but good things ahead.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry. Tickets are available at kendallscrusade.org. I guess I could give where they could get them. Kendallscrusade.org is where they can get the event ticket.
For sure. Well, hey, let's talk Phillies for just a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk about this other stuff. It's actually pretty cool stuff. But hey, we're 60 games in. We're 29-31. Playing far better ball than I think anybody expected. And Chet and I talked about this just last week. You know, even though they're playing better than we expected, now we're disappointed.
I know. It's almost been you know, having peaks and valleys like this is so Philly, isn't it? You can't just, like, motor along at 500. You have to be dramatic in one fashion or another. But they're not.
Yep.
This is a team that has some really good young pitching. And that's why I hate to see somebody like Velasquez go down today. They're just going in the, you know, the right direction and the wrong direction. But this offense is like nothing I've ever seen before. I mean, even Pete McCann was talking yesterday about how he has faith in Steve Henderson and how, you know, he's in there in the cage watching Hindu is his nickname. And he's demonstrating how you're basically the, you know, hit down on the ball. The really simple, like you start learning it in Little League. And then they get in there in the game and they start uppercutting. And, you know, this is a problem that we deal with our 10-year-olds. You don't expect to deal with it with your major leaguers. But that's, you know, there's issues there, consistency and putting good, stringing good at-bats together.
Hey, Leslie, the amateur draft, Leslie, is taking place over the next few days. No clear-cut number one pick, and the Phillies hold that top pick, of course. The top names seem to be outfielder Kyle Lewis from Mercer University and 6'7" left-handed pitcher A.J. Puck from the University of Florida. Have you heard any whispers about whom they might take?
I haven't. It's been a closely guarded secret. You know, I think I like the idea of them getting somebody with some pop. Maybe that's because they don't have anybody that stands out right now in the system like that. I remember for a long time they went after speed. They got a lot of young speedy guys. You know, that doesn't mean that Puck isn't the perfect fit for them, but I like the idea of them, you know, looking for somebody who's got a nice bat that could eventually get into this lineup.
Leslie, it seems like as much as, I don't know, maybe people don't want to talk a lot about it. We go one side, we go the other, but it seems to me that Ryan Howard is still the elephant in the room. And even though he's seeming to be a great teammate and he's trying to work with Tommy Joseph and some of the younger kids, Until he's cleared of the room, I think it's going to be a struggle to move forward. What's your take?
I would agree with that with almost anybody except Ryan Howard. And I think Ryan Howard is doing everything in his power not to disrupt that clubhouse right now. And I think that the way he's handled this has been incredibly impressive to me. I have witnessed him when not feeling watched, just being in his element in the room with Tommy Joseph. There's an ease that Ryan has with the players in that room. He is energized by their energy, and he has resigned himself to the idea that, or the fact that if he can't, if, you know, all he can do, his attitude, however he chooses to be attitude-wise, isn't going to change the decisions that are being made. So he can choose to be miserable, or he can choose to go with the flow. And why not go with the flow? And he sees that he is not a selfish player or person in any way. I think that what you're saying to me, that elephant in the room, was Chase Utley, was Jonathan Papelbon, was Cole Hamels. They're gone. And the reason why, in my opinion, and in talking to some of these younger players who were very respectful and politically correct in the way they, you know, sort of spoke about this off camera, but it's their clubhouse now. And Carlos Ruiz is a leader, but not someone who overshadows anybody in there or tries to command any kind of attention or respect. And Ryan Howard is a leader by virtue of what he's done for this organization, what he's achieved in his career, but he is in no way somebody who's going to allow this to affect the clubhouse, in my opinion. I think he's done a tremendous job.
Yeah, I agree. Despite the 150 batting average and the diminished playing time, he is handling it very well. Now, the guy
the page has turned, in my opinion. I mean, this is, we can sit here and say, oh, they're platooning now, or, oh, if he has a few great days. I don't buy that. He's going to be a part. Plug him in for a while. I thought, why wouldn't they release him? But I think now, seeing how he's handling this transition, that he adds value to this clubhouse to be a veteran presence in there and to keep things light when they go sour. And I just think I've sort of changed my mind on whether or not I think they could release him at some point, because I think if all things continue to go as they're going, I think I could see them keeping him around.
What about Tommy Joseph, his replacement? He's batting .311. He's just 24. Might he be the real deal, Tommy Joseph?
I think that he's hit at every level. Since he's really turned things around, gotten healthy, and I think he hit rock bottom with being removed from the 40-man roster and the major league roster. And he is he wanted to show people what he was made of, and he did that. And he came up, and I do believe that it's very hard to fool people with the kind of stroke that he has and the way that he has hit this year. I think he is. I think there's a really good chance he's going to be, the rock in this lineup for many years.
Leslie, the way the last few weeks have gone, it kind of looks like the bottom could fall out and head back towards that 9,500 loss season. And we certainly hope not. We want to see more of the way that was at the start of this season. How do you see this thing playing out? And they're just not enough bats in that lineup.
Now that the Cubs are out of their life, I think they're going to level out.
That's good.
In six games over the course of the last 2 weeks, and they're a powerhouse. They're a team that has five incredible starting pitchers. They have depth. They have guys who can hurt you up and down that lineup. We had one of those about 8 years ago. 7 years ago, 6 years ago, but they have that right now. And so the Phillies hit them and Detroit, and, they hit some good teams, but I think they're going to level out, especially when they get back into their NL East schedule.
I hope you're right. Well, hey, Leslie, we're going to let you get off here early, but we still wanted, Chet wanted to run you through his quick, fast five real quick.
Sure.
Do you have a couple more minutes?
Sure, yep.
Have at it, Chet.
And this is the two-minute version, Leslie, not the 9 minutes that we took last year, okay? This is the speed version.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
All right, with Leslie Goodell, fast five. Leslie, when the baseball season began, Bill predicted 70 wins for the Phillies. I said 72. As we speak, they're 29 and 31. So how many wins for the Fightins this season?
I'm going to go 76.
Okay. We talked about it, but will Ryan Howard remain a Philly this entire season?
Last week I would have said no. This week I say it's possible. I think it's a possibility.
What's more exciting, watching paint dry or Ryan Sandberg news? Oh, no, wait, that was from last year. Don't answer that. That was a leftover question from your 2015 visit that I wisely chose not to ask
still
you.
More, watching paint dry is still more interesting.
I know. I'm just kidding. Poor Ryan. Hey, let's see if you do know this one, Leslie. You have an IMDb page. That's the Internet Movie Database. One item, of course, is anchor reporter for Comcast Sportsnet. Tell me, what is the second listed item on your IMDb page?
Oh, geez, I have no idea. I didn't know I had an IMDb page. Really?
Yeah. Yes, sideline reporter for the 2001 Tostitos Fiesta Bowl.
Oh, yes, that's on my list. I did.
Yeah, you're famous.
Bowls and, yeah,
you have an IMDb page.
Time. That's funny.
All right, number four, there's a bunch of candidates out there, but who is your favorite still active ex-Philly?
My favorite still active ex-Philly, Jimmy.
Wow.
Jimmy,
see, I would have thought you were gone with Chase Sully. You have a son named Chase,
yeah.
And I thought you were going to say Chase Sully.
Oh, no.
You're surprised.
Jimmy's probably overall, you know, the total
okay.
package of, you know, just a guy I really have a lot of respect for and appreciated
gotcha.
Covering for so long.
And finally, Leslie, we talked about music last summer when you were with us, including your unusual affection for Oingo Boingo. The question this time, though, what is the best concert you've seen in the last 3 or 4 years?
The best concert, probably Zac Brown.
There you go. We did it. Leslie Goodell.
Zac Brown or Kenny Chesney.
I know you like your country music. Thanks for playing Fast Five, Leslie.
Guys, thanks for having me.
All right, Leslie. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you and your family.
All right, guys. Thanks again. I really appreciate it.
All right. Enjoy
Take
your
care.
Night.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Chet. Good stuff as always with Leslie. Fantastic. The Kendall's Crusade is going great, as you heard, and that's exciting news. And I know you follow that Facebook page. I do, too, and best of luck to them.
Yeah, her daughter sounds like she's getting better, and that's great. And the positive attitude is just amazing. So we wish them all the best.
You bet. Well, hey, let's get to our trivia question. We're pretty much right on schedule. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that trivia question again is 929-477-2855. And as mentioned, we'll be giving away the signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles star linebacker Jordan Hicks, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer the question. So here we go. We're going baseball tonight, Chet. This one might be pretty easy, but I think it might actually be a little tricky, too. Cole Hamels spent all or part of 10 seasons with the Phillies. How many times was he the opening day starter? Did you know that one, Mr. Chesko?
Well, I saw the answer, but I'll tell you, I would have guessed a number that was slightly different than the actual answer. I would have missed it probably, well, slightly. How about that? I would have missed it.
Right. Yeah, I think I would have, too, as I was a little surprised when I was putting that together that it was that many.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Cole Hamels spent all or part of 10 seasons with the Phillies. How many times was he the opening day starter? Okay, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. You have any questions? Contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Okay, Chet, we have a couple trying to answer our call tonight, I think, don't we?
Yes, we do. Let's see who is number one on the list from an 863 area code.
Wow, that's down here in the sunshine.
Oh, I think we've lost that one.
Uh-oh.
Hello, who do we have? Hi, who do we have from the 267 area code?
Hello.
Hello, who are you?
This is Bill.
Hey, Bill. You have Bill and Chet.
Yes. How you doing, guys?
Good.
My guess is 5.
5 is incorrect, Bill.
Oh, sorry about that.
You're limited to 1 guess, so sorry, you do not win.
Love the show.
All right.
Okay,
thanks for calling, Bill.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Still open, Chet. We'll put it back out there again. Cole Hamels spent all or part of 10 seasons with the Phillies. How many times was he the opening day starter? And we know the answer is not 5. All right. Okay, well, Chet, hey, many people are mourning the loss of boxing legend Muhammad Ali, who passed away on June 3rd at the age of 74. And Ali was certainly an interesting figure around the world.
Boy, interesting to say the least. He was also, of course, quite polarizing. I have plenty of thoughts about Ali and his life, as I'm sure you do.
I do, and, you know, my opinion of Muhammad Ali has never been very favorable. I was always a Joe Frazier guy, and I listened to many, many people idolize the man, and, you know, over the last week, and I've asked myself, you know, what am I missing here? And what I tried to do is I tried to educate myself on Ali, and, you know, we'll get to that shortly. But I will tell you, my opinion up to this point, Chad, has always been that Ali was a fantastic fighter, more fantastic of a master self-promoter. I mean, after all, his nickname is The Greatest, and it was given to him by himself. So, Chad, that'd be like you deciding you're going to be called Chet the Legend, and then everybody starts calling you that. I'm not sure it's a real nickname if you name yourself that. But
yeah,
he was
you
also
know what?
Yeah.
He was the mouth that roared for sure, but he got a lot of that, he once admitted, from the wrestler Gorgeous George. He, you know, found out that, hey, if you promote yourself, a lot of people are going to buy what you're saying. So, yeah, he got a lot of that from Gorgeous George, and it stuck. And, boy, he did love to talk, that's for sure.
He did, and I was going to say that he was the cockiest and most arrogant athlete probably that I'd ever seen. And the trash talking that we see every week now, I believe, has become commonplace, and he was the one that originated that way back in the mid-60s. And, you know, a few other negative things, I guess, and we'll get to the positive things, but he fathered 9 children, possibly 10, 4 wives, at least 2, if not 3 mistresses. And then there was the treatment of Joe Frazier, in which he tried to basically turn the black population against Frazier as being a white man's fighter, and it created a lot of division among the ranks back in the day. And, you know, the criticism of Joe Frazier certainly isn't and wasn't deserved. And, you know, of course, there's the political side, the polarizing side of things regarding the Vietnam War. And, you know, I heard an interview with Brian Gumbel and Bob Costas on Sunday where they spoke of Ali giving up everything for his stance with the war and going to jail instead. And I guess my thought was he didn't give up everything. Those young men that went and fought for their country, they gave up everything, not him. So, you know, I wanted to say, with all that said, I wanted to better understand the subject. And so what I did is I solicited 8 opinions, 4 blacks, 4 whites, 4 older than me, 4 younger than me. And I got 7 of those 8 requests back, and I've tried to summarize that, you know, for the sake of time. But I can tell you it has been very, very educational for me.
Oh, I believe it has. And we're going to have you, you know, sum that up in a second. But let me just jump in and say, yeah, I agree. Ali was not perfect. He cheated on his wife. He crossed the line when he called Floyd Patterson and Joe Frazier Uncle Tom. He also called Frazier ugly and a gorilla. Yeah, that is crossing the line. But, you know, there was a lot of good to him, too, and we're going to get to that as well.
All right. Hey, do we happen to have a caller before we move on to Ali? Do we have a caller
for
a trivia question?
We have a caller from the 215 area code. So who do we have?
This is Robbie Ellis.
Robbie Ellis.
Hey. Well, we're right up your alley, Robbie, if we're talking Cole Hamels.
You sure are. I believe
and
he
Muhammad Ali
started two games.
He did.
Two is correct, Robbie.
Two is correct. And I will tell you, 2013 and 2015, which
15.
I found very interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And Clifford,
and we knew you were a big Cole Hamels fan. That's awesome.
Well, actually, Robbie, in Cole's time with the Phillies, John Lieber, Brett Myers, Roy Halladay, and Cliff Lee started those other opening games that Cole just started two of.
Yeah, and he started a couple of the home when they were home. But
right.
The only two that he started that were actually the opening day were two. And then I think in 2009 he was injured. And 2014 he was injured.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't start the
yeah.
season. So
that's
yeah, I'm a
right.
pretty
right.
good expert on Cole's career.
There you go. I just wasn't sure that you would call us, but I'm awful glad you did, and you're the winner of the Jordan Hicks picture.
Oh, awesome. I love Jordan Hicks.
There you go. Well, do me a favor, Robbie, when we're through, if you would, just send me a Facebook message, private message with your address and that, and we'll get that right out to you.
Okay, you want me to send it to you, Bill, or
yeah, just send
Jim?
It to me. That's fine.
Okay, hon, will do.
All right.
Hey,
thanks,
Robbie. Nice to hear your voice.
Calling.
Okay,
thanks
guys.
For calling
bye
in.
Bye.
All right, Chet. Good. Great to hear from Robbie. Fantastic. We're right up her alley with Cole Hamels. Fantastic.
Oh yeah, she loves her Phillies and she loves Cole Hamels. So that was nice to see her win.
Yep. All right, Chet. Well, hey, listen. Let me tell you. Explain what I did here and. As I mentioned, I solicited 8 opinions, 2 older black men, UCLA national champion and Philly native Andre McCarter, our friend and Philly lifer Big John Roberts, Lakeland's Eddie Goins, who I wasn't able to make contact with, but a little background on Eddie. He broke all Mike Quick's receiving records at North Carolina State, which were later broken
wow.
by Torrey Holt. And Eddie is now an actor in Los Angeles who just finished a film titled Ali Speaks. And he's trying to get funding for that. And the trailer is available on YouTube. You can check that out. And Eddie's a great guy. And I knew he thought the world of Ali. And he's actually the one that plays Ali in this film. And so I just couldn't get connected with him, but I wanted to do that. And Forrest Jackson, a young man that I coached, that I think the world of. Forrest is now the linebacker coach at Tuskegee University, and him and Eddie are younger than me, and the other two guys are older than me. So I started out with those four, and then I spoke with 4 white men. Jim McElwain, a friend who served near the same time as Ali and served in the Vietnam War. Our friend Frank Fitzpatrick, the outstanding writer from The Enquirer. Dave Capper, a lifelong friend and history buff, and our friend Kevin McClure. And as you know, Kevin always has great sports insight. So that was my panel of 8 to see what I could learn.
And what did you learn?
Well, here's the common theme. The common theme for everyone was something I think that seemed so simple in 2016, but certainly was not in the mid-1960s, and that was that no man should be treated as a second-class citizen and denied services because of the color of their skin. And that's really the crux of the Ali, Cassius Clay Ali in the mid-60s. But overall, you know, those that had questions about Ali, most of them revolve around those middle years. And those anti-establishment years when Ali threw his gold medal in the river and refused to go to the war to enhance the white man, as he said. But Big John Roberts says, and I think this is fantastic, he said, think about it this way. It's 1960. You go to represent your country in the Olympics, and they tell you that regardless of your skin color, you're going to Tokyo to represent your country. And your country tells you that if you go and represent the United States, that you will have and enjoy the same rights as anybody from your country. You win a medal, it says USA. You feel pride, not just from your athletic accomplishments, but the country you represented over in Japan, and you're made to feel equal with your white counterparts, other athletes that you feel akin to. You come home with your shiny medal, feel like an American, and walk into a restaurant in the country you just represented, and they take one look at you and say, we don't serve you. You ask why, and they tell you because it's the color of your skin. You'd be bitter too. That's why he threw his medal away, because he was treated as a second-class citizen.
I hear you.
Pretty fantastic stuff. So I went on, and Jim McElwain, who, as I mentioned, served, was drafted at the same time, and he was he looked at it this way. He said, "I find it hard to accept since he had his made his living beating people, yet he was refused induction due to his being a conscious objector. But he used violence to make his living." He says that this does not match his declared status. He said, with that said, he did help the black community, and he deserves credit for that, something that more of the current prima donna athletes should be doing. Another look. And Frank Fitzpatrick, also very, very sharp guy, as you know. He says, Ali was the greatest sports figure of my time and an equally potent cultural figure. Perhaps because I was 14 when he won the title, and because he was such a unique and groundbreaking figure, the whole world seemed to divide into before and after Ali. Think about how athletes, boxers, Muslims, and African Americans were received before he arrived. Mm-hmm. So good stuff so far. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I remember some of that from the mid-60s. I was, 7, 8, 9 years old in the mid-60s. A lot of people didn't like his brashness, his loud mouth. He really lost a lot of fans when he converted to Nation of Islam, 64-ish. We didn't get the whole Muslim thing. And then, of course, there was the decision in 67 not to go to the Vietnam War when he was drafted. You know, he famously said, "I ain't got no quarrel with those Viet Cong." So the funny thing is, though, over time, I think a lot of people came to agree that the Vietnam War was a mistake for the U.S., and they also became more understanding of Ali's decision, which he said was based on religious reasons. So, yeah, in the 60s, a lot of people hated him for it, but I think over time, he demanded more respect. He got more respect for his stance.
Well, he did, and I think Dave was my next man up, and as I mentioned, Dave is a bit of a history buff, and he kind of broke this thing out into two categories. He says at 18, he wins the Olympic gold medal for the light heavyweight division. He fights and wins the pro heavyweight championship twice when he was a prohibitive underdog, first time at age 22. He introduces radically new boxing styles, the rope-a-dope and the backing away with speed to avoid punches. He says, "My father always thought that Joe Louis would have been a tough match for Ali, but he always thought that Ali was the best fighter he had ever seen. An athlete, Ali, in my opinion, is at the top of the all-time heavyweights." So from athletically, he looks at it this way, but then he looks at the other guy, the other side, and it's those middle years again. He says, the more difficult Ali is the social hero he has been made into. Ali at 18 was found to be illiterate, thus unqualified to be drafted. No wars to fight in 1960. Had he gone into the Army then, he would have served 2 years and been allowed to train, and most likely would be allowed to fight amateur bouts. Instead, he became the champ in 1964 and joins the Nation of Islam. Vietnam War starts in 1965, and Ali has his draft status changed as he is called up immediately. Why did this happen? Ultimately, Ali wins his appeal to the Supreme Court that thinks his status as a conscientious objector should have been granted. In the end, I can't say I agree with the position he took in refusing to serve. The choice he made by joining such a radical group like the Nation of Islam, the adulterous lifestyle he lived, the insults and malice that he inflicted on Frazier and others, I do understand that some can see him as a hero, because he made himself into a world champion. He elevated the purses in boxing far beyond what they were in the 1960s. He was a countercultural person that protested for the civil rights of blacks, and that he was against the Vietnam War at the very beginning. I don't remember cheering for him, but he sure did entertain me.
Oh, man, me too. I loved watching the guy fight. I mean, he was colorful. As you said, he danced in the ring. He also predicted the round. He'd finish his opponent, and he was frequently dead on. And boy, was he an entertaining interview. We know his interviews with Howard Cosell. Some of those are legendary. The 60s and 70s were an exciting time for boxing. Heavyweight boxing was huge in the 60s and 70s, and Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, was at the head of the class. It was an exciting time, maybe in the 80s when Tyson came along as well, but otherwise boxing has pretty much been a forgotten sport, especially the heavyweight division, you know, for the masses. I doubt that it'll ever be as exciting as it was when Ali, Frazier, Foreman, Holmes, and those guys were in the ring in, you know, the late 60s and the 1970s.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that kind of leads right into what Kevin said, so I'll go with his. He says, to be the greatest, you have to be more than just great on the field. He gave up prime years to take a stand against going into the Army. You may not like it, but he didn't run. He could have left the country and continued his career. Instead, he stayed here, accepted his punishment. He was great with kids. He gave a lot of time and money to charity. He didn't hide when he was sick. A lot of people in his shoes would have been missing in action for the last 25 years when he could no longer speak and tell how he was the greatest. Ali remained visible. Ali definitely was not perfect. His treatment of Joe Frazier prior to their first fight was reprehensible. He has also supported many things that most Americans would not agree with and took many controversial stands during his life. Even with the baggage, he is still the greatest. Whether you loved him or hated him, you always were interested in what he was doing. If you loved him, you watched to see him win. If you hated him, you watched to see if somebody could kick his ass. Either way, you watched and you cared what the result was. That was not only the feeling here in the USA, but everywhere in the world. No other athlete has ever had the kind of following. Muhammad Ali might be the only athlete of our time that could have a college course devoted to his life. A lot of ground to cover there, and it would be an interesting class if the right person taught it. That is why he is the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very few guys have, I think, transcended their sport. You had, you know, maybe Babe Ruth, and you had perhaps Jesse Owens, and then you had Muhammad Ali. Sports Illustrated named him the Sportsman of the Century for a reason. That's quite an honor, Sportsman of the Century. Will Chamberlain, too, you can put on that list. But, yeah, in addition to what he did for the sport, there was Ali the man. He was a champion of civil rights, as you mentioned, always seeking equality for everyone. And by almost all accounts, he was a great guy. There were tons of stories, you know, over the past week since he died of people, like even the Daily News' Dick Girardi as a young fan in 1974, just showing up at Ali's training facility in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, and getting invited in and getting the opportunity to hang out with and talk with the champ. He brought you in. He would let you, you know, watch him train, talk to you, have some breakfast with him, even if you were just a guy off the street. So many great memories of that. One of my high school friends told me once, and this was in like 1972, that Muhammad Ali stopped by his house because he knew somebody in the family. I said, yeah, right. Well, he showed me the pictures. They were posted on Facebook again this week. There's Muhammad Ali with my 12 or 13-year-old friend. And just apparently a great guy and so much fun to be around. So great boxer and pretty good guy as well.
All right. Well, hey, the final words that I got from both Andre McCarter and Forrest Jackson, and both of these guys truly understand the legacy. And first from Andre, he says, Ali has an expansive bio from standing on principle that lost him money to his comeback in his profession to talking down off a roof a suicidal Vietnam vet and following up on his needs. Respect for discipline and effort in a lifetime. And from Forrest, you know, Forrest is the youngest of the entire group here who was not old enough to actually have seen Ali as a fighter. He said, but the first thing that comes to mind when I think about Ali is confidence. Although I didn't live at a time when he was the most popular, the lesson I learned from him is to be confident in yourself, even if no one else in this world is confident about your ability. The second lesson is the power of charisma. Outside of his boxing craft, Ali's personality, filled with antics and punchlines, lit up a room. Fans loved interacting with him. Companies paid him to be a spokesman, and it was all a ploy to keep the money rolling in. It was part of the grand hustle. Bottom line, though, he was a good fighter, and it was a three-time heavyweight champion. And, Chet, I will say in closing, as I mentioned at the top, this has been really educational for me with the opinions all over the map and the biggest takeaway is the complex life of Muhammad Ali, but he made people feel entertained and for the most part feel good about themselves, and that's not a bad legacy to have. So with that, rest in peace, Muhammad Ali.
Yes, good stuff, Bill. And by the way, no matter how you felt about him, one of the greatest memories of Muhammad Ali was the former champ at age 54, but looking older amid battling advanced Parkinson's disease, him lighting the Olympic torch in Atlanta in 1996. I see that. I still get chills. Just what a great moment that was.
Well, and I will tell you that it's an interesting moment because it was a moment that I could not stand. And
wow.
I certainly now have a much better perspective on that because of all the things that I've learned here. As I watched that at the time, I thought this man is not a hero, and he does not need to be representing us in that torch lighting. So, like I say, I'd like to think I'm a far better man, a far more understanding now than I was a week ago.
I'm sure you are, and a good job by you. And by the way, I'm going to have one more thought about Muhammad Ali in my parting shot about 10 minutes from now.
Okay. Well, hey, let's move on real quick. And I was flipping the channels and came across the Mets-Dodgers game a week or so ago, and where the Mets threw behind Chase Utley as payback for last year's incident. I posted about it on Facebook and, for the most part, got positive feedback, but also got a handful of "who cares, he's a Dodger" comments, which led me to want to discuss the topic of cheering, liking, or disliking our former players that are now playing elsewhere. And there's a ton of examples that we can discuss. But what's your general take on a Philadelphia athlete that is no longer a Philadelphia athlete?
Well, as our pal Robbie Ellis, who we just heard from moments ago, said on Facebook today, a big part of it is the circumstances under which the athlete left town. For example, we loved T.O. when he was here, but he ticked a lot of people off with his year two antics in 2005. And then, of course, he ended up as a Cowboy. So, naturally, he was not too popular as an ex-Philly athlete. Donovan McNabb was somewhat polarizing even in his last few years in town. So, when his performance declined, fans turned on him. Mike Richards, something of a jerk by a lot of accounts, so he's not real popular anymore. Jonathan Papelbon was wearing out his welcome in town, even as he was becoming the Phil's all-time saves leader. But then on the other hand, there are guys like Darren Dalton, Scott Hartnell, Chase Utley, and Jimmy Rollins, who will always be well thought of. So, yeah, it kind of depends, you know, what forces led you to become an ex-Philadelphia athlete.
Well, one of the names, and you didn't mention it, but the one I had on my list I think is really interesting is Curt Schilling. You know, Curt Schilling was a heck of a pitcher with the Phillies, and you know, he kind of wore out of his welcome and wanted to be traded. But, you know, he was a guy that every time he pitched, I looked in the newspaper to see how he did, even when he was gone. To me, he was a gamer pitcher that I wanted to see be pretty successful because whatever his problems were with the team, he was pretty good.
Oh, I rooted for Schilling even after, you know, his forced out of town, his move to get forced out of, to be out of town. I loved watching Curt Schilling pitch. I was glad to see him have that postseason success that he had. A bit controversial still today. He likes to run his mouth, get himself into trouble, but boy, could that guy pitch, and I would cheer for him any time that he was on the mound.
But do you as the season goes on or whichever season we're in, do you pick up the newspaper or online now and look at the stats of how these guys did last night or once a week or something like that, regardless of what the sport is? I think that's
really
the key.
No, not that often.
You let them go away.
Yeah, not that often. I kind of let it go. Another guy we could have mentioned, by the way, was Scott Rowland. He said some things as he forced his hand and didn't think the Phillies were doing enough to compete. So Rowland, of course, got booed pretty heavily every time he came back. But to get back to your point, no, I don't really follow them that closely. But when they do come back, I'm not going to boo any of them. Maybe T.O. a little bit in 2006 when he came back as a Cowboy. But other than that, I'm pretty fair to these guys, I think. And sometimes I think we as fans are unfair, like the whole Andre Iguodala thing. There's another guy. I don't think he was overly appreciated as a Sixer when he was here. He didn't say too much, you know, controversial. You know, maybe he thought he was a little better than he was, but I still rooted for Andre Iguodala when he went elsewhere. not a bad guy, good player, solid role player. No, he wasn't an all-star. Well, other than that one year, he actually was. He wasn't a superstar, I should say, but, you know, still a pretty decent player, not a bad guy. So I'm going to root for a guy like Iguodala.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not much of a booer to begin with at any time, but now I will take an exception because I was in the link when T.O. did make his return, and I would say I've been to a handful of NFC Championship games, and that stadium was never as loud as it was that day, and that passion was aimed directly at Darrell Owens, and actually it was a lot of fun just booing the heck out of him.
It was. I was there as well on the 35-yard line, lower level, and I don't know if I booed, but I enjoyed watching him not catch a pass in the first half and watching the Cowboys lose that day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think it's an interesting topic, and as I said, I was really surprised as, you know, most fans are Chase Utley fans, I think, but to get some comments back, it says, who cares? He's a Dodger. And somebody said, isn't he a Dodger? Like, we shouldn't even be talking about him. I just find that to be very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Hamels is another guy that I will root for. And I know you were very happy with what he did on Monday on D-Day, right?
Oh, absolutely. And Cole Hamels is nothing but a class act. And actually, that's what led to the trivia question, because Cole was on my mind, that post that he had. And it was liked by a whole bunch of people. Top of the line, Cole Hamels, and it's a shame that that whole thing fell out the way it did. I think Hamels is going to do fantastic. I think the Phillies are going to do well by that trade. It's a win-win for everybody, except Philadelphia certainly lost the class act when they traded him.
They did indeed, but yeah, it's going to work out, I think, for him and for the Phillies going forward.
All right. Well, hey, Chet, the NHL and NBA championships are well underway, and I got to tell you, they're both blowouts at this point, and they have not been very entertaining. Have you been trying to watch any of it?
Yeah. Refresh my memory. Did I actually pick the Cavs to win this NBA final series?
You did, and so did Barrett Brooks, and I hate to say it, but so did Bill Furman.
Maybe I should quit drinking before the show. Nah, I'm not going to do that. Listen, the Cavs certainly did not look great in Games 1 or especially Game 2, but now they're back home, so as we speak on this Wednesday evening, for them to have any chance, a Game 3 win tonight is a must. They got to win this one. Then they got a shot at least. If they don't win tonight, it's over. As for the Stanley Cup Finals, we both picked the Penguins, although we're rooting against them, and it looks like we're going to be right about who wins and the fact that Sidney Crosby is going to be hoisting a cup again.
It is going to happen, and the way that whole series is going, it's going to happen pretty soon.
Yep.
And I hate it. I hate it. But I tell you one thing that I have seen, and I certainly am not going to compliment Sidney Crosby because it's against my better judgments. But just like with Ovechkin, I think what has happened to both Crosby and Ovechkin is they – whether it's their new coaches or whatever they got going on for them now, is they are not playing as me guys. They're playing as we guys. And by doing that, they're playing better and their teams are playing better. And whatever switch got switched by these coaches, they've both made their team better. And that's scary.
Yep. Can't disagree.
All right. Well, okay, Chet, let's see. We got our trivia out of the way. Let's get to our signing updates and at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And first, I have to stand corrected on last week, Chet. I think I must have made a typo when I reported that First Flyers captain Lou Angotti was in the store on June the 1st, when it actually is June the 11th. I must have only put down 1-1. So it's June 11th. This Saturday, Lou Angotti. So if you want to catch the First Flyer captain, you can still catch him this weekend. Brian Dawkins will still be in the store next Saturday, June the 19th. That's a Father's Day weekend special. Former Eagles Pro Bowl running back Wilbert Montgomery will be in the store on June the 25th. June 30th, Chet, you got to get in on one of these. Carl's Cards will be having another night at the Reading Phillies game. free tickets while they last. You better get in on that. You keep saying you're going to do it. You've been saying it for 2 years.
That's a Thursday night. Carl, save me a ticket. Carl, you hear me? Save me a ticket for June 30th.
Oh, there you go. You're committed. Okay.
Yep.
Also, current Phillies infielder Andres Blanco has just been added to the list. He will be in the store July the 16th. And former Flyer Sean Podine will be in the store on July the 23rd. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give him a call, 610-789-4996. You can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. All right, Chet, we are going to want to let the listeners know that we are going to take next week off due to us both having previous commitments. Me, a retirement dinner, which unfortunately is not my retirement dinner, and you have some graduation events.
Yeah, not one of my kids this time, but my niece Julia, who's just a great kid and who I believe is being honored for graduating number one or number two in her class, smart kid. And we will be back in 2 weeks, the evening of June 22nd, which just so happens to be NBA Draft Night Eve. So we'll be joined by Bucks County Courier-Times Sixers beat writer Tom Moore to talk about any possible trades and what the Sixers will do with that first overall pick.
Sounds great. Looking forward to that. Tom's always been good. Okay, Mr. Chesko, do you have a party? I know you have a parting shot on Muhammad Ali. I do not have a parting shot tonight, so time's yours.
When I heard the news last Saturday morning that Muhammad Ali had died, I was pretty sad about yet another major figure from my youth having left us. I mean, heck, in the past year alone, we lost Moses Malone, Daryl Dawkins, David Bowie, Prince, Glenn Frey, Ed Snyder, and Rick McLeish. But anyway, I immediately thought about the three or four times in the mid-60s when, as a very young kid, I watched Cassius Clay's or Muhammad Ali's fights on Wide World of Sports with my dad. Yeah, the fights were on TV on those occasional Saturday afternoons, some live, some on tape. And then my father's reaction to the champ's decision not to go into the Army. As a World War II veteran, my dad was not real happy with that choice. I think he used the word coward. Well, my dad is 92 now and still very much with it, so I called him Saturday to say hello and to get his reaction to the news, thinking maybe, just maybe, he had softened his stance on Ali over the last 45 or so years. First words out of his mouth, "Oh, that bum." I said, "So, Dad, you haven't forgiven him for his decision?" His answer, "Nope." And then he quickly changed the subject. As a vet, my dad's stance didn't entirely surprise me. I love my father, and I certainly understand how he feels, but as I said earlier, I choose to remember Ali as a guy who was a tremendous athlete, the greatest sportsman of the 20th century, perhaps, as someone who stood up for his beliefs, even knowing that he would be ridiculed by millions, as a three-time champ in the ring, and more importantly, as a humanitarian and champion of civil rights. Rest in peace, champ.
Amen. All right, Chet, we're at the top of the hour, so let's thank our special guest, Leslie Gazelle, Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. Our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, June 22nd at 7 p.m. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.